Welcome, welcome.
Hello, Anya. This is what we said, episode 39.
Yes.
Why does it feel like it's such... I mean, it feels like it's not enough for all the many conversations we've had to see the number 39, it seems.
Or you expect like 100 or...
I don't know. I mean, we did what you said, average 9-10 episodes
like
a year.
Okay. It's like taking consideration 2 months of like normally like a break, either like summer break or just like, you know, 1 month of something not going on.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yes. What we're doing today? We're doing the review.
Yes.
Of
a show. Look at us moving, finally integrating some ideas of like reviewing things. I'm glad I'm slowly pulling you along to this idea, Mom.
It has always been your idea. I'm not a big fan of doing review. And you know why?
Why?
Because of you.
Huh?
Yes.
Why?
Because there's always this, oh, you have to be careful of spoilers. And I always feel this generation is so fragile.
No.
That if you're talking about a movie and they never watched it, oh my God, you spoiled it for me. I know it's like my life is ruined.
You know what? No, you know what? This generation is about clarity. If we state at the beginning, we are going to be talking about the show in depth, so there are going to be spoilers. Nobody needs to say anything about it. They have reviews or people want to listen to it to see if it's even worth watching without knowing too much about it. That's the point, right? Clarity is what the generation is about, Miss Ma'am.
No,
anyway,
I want to say that I find it sad that people can just be like, because I would watch a review even if they put spoilers in it and still be able to watch the show or whatever.
Okay, that's you though. That's you generalizing. You're just because that's all. Oh my God. Okay, let's just start with the review because okay, it's just on. I cannot hurt this rabbit hole. It's just not going to get back out. Anyway, two strangers.
No, it's two distant strangers.
Okay, okay.
So it's a Netflix short film, 30 minutes, minutes max. The writer is Trayvon Free, and he also directed it with Martin Desmond Roy. That's the name of the other director. So Trayvon Free was a writer on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
Mm-hmm.
I saw an interview with him and Trevor Noah, and he said that he made the movie he wanted to visualize for people who weren't black what the experience of being black is.
Yeah.
So I just want to say that, but let me get into what the movie is about. So the character is called Carter James, and it's the actor is Joey Badass. Did you know this?
Really?
That's, you know him?
That's such a cool last name. No, I don't know him.
Do
but
you
that's
really
a...
think that this?
Who would want bad? Like, seem like badass king or like, you know,
is
rich.
That, but that's
you know
not his real last name, though, Anya.
I know that, but that's cool.
Anyway, as I was saying, apparently he's some rapper/actor person, and his name is Joey Badass. And so he plays the character of Carter James, who is a black, he says he's a graphic designer, I think, at one point in the show.
Who's like caught up in that Groundhog Day like
situation.
He keeps reliving the same situation over and over.
Of being
killed by the police.
Assaulted and killed by the police.
Yeah.
All right, so is that too much spoiler for your fragile people?
I had the preface at the beginning. We're going to be talking about it in depth, which means that we're going to be talking about everything that's going on. So people who, you know it's spoilers, know it's spoilers. Okay, I think for the first topic, we definitely have to talk about what we've talked about multiple times before already, is the whole deal of, like, trauma porn, because, okay, you, Daddy and Jonathan started watching it before without me. And then
all right, so before we go into that, though, let's just, like, continue to talk about it surrounds the life of a man, a young black guy who, like you said, have this Groundhog Day. Have you ever watched the movie Groundhog Day?
I think I've seen snippets of it. But like that idea of a movie, like there are other movies that have that, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So he keeps reliving being assaulted and ultimately killed by the police officer after having spent the night at
a girl's house.
The movie, by the way, is nominated for an Oscar in short film.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so it's critically acclaimed.
Okay.
All right, so... Right. So
experience watching it the first time, I guess.
How I came to this movie, though, let's be clear. Jonathan came to me and was like, "Mommy, you have to watch this," because I watched it and I was kind of confused as to what the end was. And let's watch it together and, you know, just do an analysis, because That's
the kind of family we are, you know. We don't watch our movies normal. We just always overanalyze.
Anyway, so I start. Actually, it was me, him, and your father. And yeah. I was like, maybe 5 minutes, 6 minutes in, and I was like, stop! I don't want to watch this. Fuck this! This is trauma porn. And I've spoken to you at length about not participating in trauma porn, not allowing people to use that as entertainment for you. So you watch it and you soak up all of that stress and you don't even realize how it manifests itself in all kind of sorts of way. And I just, you know, I went to TED Talk on him about trauma porn.
As you do. Occasionally.
As I do. And so he was like, okay, fine. I mean, you know how Jonathan is. Yeah. Okay, well, it's not that intense. But then, so I had a writer's meeting,
mm-hmm.
and at the writer's meeting, a poem was shared that just really reminded me of the exhaustion of living as a Black person, about how you have to deal with not just the full-on death and assault of police, but the microaggressions,
mm-hmm.
Living in, you know, whether it's the US or living in countries like Germany,
where we are
Black people in the minority, right? And so I recommended to the writer of the poem that, you know, you should really check this movie out, because I was only 7 minutes in and I felt the same way about the movie as I felt about your poem.
Yeah.
And it sort of dawned on me, like, okay, so I can't be the hypocrite.
And you can't give somebody a review of something you didn't even finish watching.
Exactly. So then the thing is, she went ahead and watched it, like, and she texted me while she was watching it, and I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I didn't want her to. I really never thought that she would have watched it beyond maybe the 5 or 6 minutes that I did. But then, when you know, she continued watching it, and I was like, okay, now I have to watch it, because even if it's traumatic and triggering for me, the fact that I've said it to her and she is actually doing it, like, I have to do it. And then, so that's the genesis, or, you know,
how we ended up here.
And then, you know, we decided to sit together, the four of us as a family, and watch it. So,
because I started reading the book White Fragility, which I'm trying to finish up soon, hopefully, to maybe have
your reading.
Oh my God.
All right, so anyway, but I think it was very interesting to watch it, all four of us.
Yeah.
You know, me being a Black woman, your father being white German, and you and Jonathan being mixed. I thought to myself, after 10 minutes, 15 minutes in, okay, so this show is not directed
at black people.
No, it's not directed for Black people or mixed race people.
Yeah, people who have to deal with that kind of, like, you know, well, to less extent racism, you know.
It's racism, not a less extent. It is
no
racism.
I mean, like, in terms of, I don't think here in Germany, you know, in America they're more like, it's, you know, really have to fear for their life, whereas here, as you said, it's more the microaggressions. That's what I mean in comparison to, like, the threats. That's what I meant.
All right, so that's the kind of the background of how we came to the show. And as a family that's mixed race, watching this show is very, we can't watch it, we can't watch it always at we
same
never
level,
watch
yeah.
it at face value.
Yeah.
Where do we begin? Like, what were your impressions of the show? Let's start with your impression. And then
since I watched it basically from front to end, whereas you had the first 7 minutes, or the first couple of minutes, you knew what was going on. Like, for me, definitely the beginning was very just like trauma porn kind of way, just like rehashing the whole things. Most of the storylines after the first couple ones are kept very short. You just see him getting shot, blood splat, all of that, you know, very, you know, graphic. And then the longest story that they show is when, because basically what happens is that he starts to explain what's going on to the situation. So, like, there are a couple ones when he talks to the girl and he tells her, like, yo, I'm in Groundhog Day, and, like, he proves it to her by, you know, predicting things that are, you know, gonna happen because he's seen it, like, so many times. There are some interesting conversations coming from that. Maybe we'll talk on that later. The biggest storyline, I think, from all of them was when he attempted to talk to the police. So basically, like, talk it out to him, and it's like, you know, explain it to him. And after that, sometime that didn't always work out. One time he straight up just asked him to, like, drive me home so he can reach home, like, you know, in peace. And then at the end, he basically still gets shot. And then it turns out, like, the police is well aware of, like, him being in the Groundhog Day, and he's, like, enjoying, you know, killing him. And then, like, at the end, once again, he goes out because his whole goal is to go home to get to his dog. That's all he wants to do. And then basically, you know, it cuts off, and then the music from, what's in it? That's Just the Way It Is, the song.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally, what I found was interesting, just a quick like droplet of it, is when he talks to the girl and like he asks her straight up for like advice. Like he said, like, so okay, what do you do if somebody's gonna shoot you? And her answer was just straight up, shoot them back or shoot them first. Like what? Like it was just like so nonchalant. It's like, what, isn't it clear? And then she was like, what? Oh my God. And I know we have like this whole conversation with like, you know, gun law and like having to carry a gun, but I do see the necessity and the sense of, and she said it also in the movie, saying like, you know, she's a black woman in America. Of course she's carrying a gun to like keep herself protected. Like there's no question about that, you know? And it was interesting to see like the discourse within like the black culture, in a way, like the woman talking to the man and like seeing how he was like, no, you know, what kind of like country attitude, Texas, whatever, because you know that's like the typical, you know, gun law, you know, feelings they have towards like the more liberal people. It's like, yeah, we don't need guns and stuff. To see how you know that was kind of like dropped in, like kind of discussed. And also what I found interesting is that there was never a storyline where he actively like fought back. Like he was always either being attacked or tried to be like the kumbaya kind of like talking. So that's something that the first thing that I think I said afterwards was like, it's interesting that they didn't show that, like they didn't show like a version of him fighting back, you know. But yeah, what were your thoughts?
I think that it was good for me to have listened to the interview that he did with Trevor Noah, the writer, when he explained that he really was not, this is not a movie that is targeted to black people.
Yeah.
I think that was very, very important for me to know, because I have a real problem with movies or songs or all of these things that are happening right now that sort of kind of encapsulate, you know, the struggle of the black man and set it for entertainment and for us to digest it just as, you know, entertainment. I have a real problem with that, and I feel like too many of us will watch it and think that we're doing it, like, you know, as a way to say, yeah, you know, I'm a black person, I should watch this. I remember years ago when I first watched Roots, because all this time I grew up in Jamaica, you know, as a young woman, young adult, you know, I never watched Roots because I felt like it was just too much. The way how my emotional states was set up, I was not invested in watching a movie that, you know, portrayed, showed the story in such a graphic way, because
yeah,
there's a scene in it where he's beaten and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've always had an issue with, you know, approaching history, slave history, from the violent point
mm-hmm.
of view. Like I'll
like
read
knowing
stuff
about it, but not traumatizing yourself.
Yeah,
by,
and
know,
to watch it in
yeah,
that kind
yeah,
of way. So when we watched it, I remember how I cried. You know, you remember we were here, and I was like, mm-hmm. "What the hell?" Like it was too much, and it
yeah,
was very emotional. So I've always been very, very cautious about how I expose my spirit to stuff like that. And then with this whole thing with, you know, Trayvon Martin, then there was, you know, George Floyd, there's Castillo, the man that was, you know, there's so many
yeah,
videos where you see, you know, the violence that is
yeah,
inflicted on black African Americans, that I was like, okay, yeah, I'm not interested. So that's why I reacted that way to watching it initially. But having watched it completely, you know, I felt like, yeah, this is a movie for, on the surface of it anyway, for white people to have a look, to have a feel about, and I think about how it is for, you know, African Americans and specifically African American men, what their life looks like.
Yeah.
You know, you go outside and it's like no matter what you do, because in each scenario, I think it says it's 99 times that, you know, there are different scenarios that played out as to what he could do
mm-hmm.
to not be assaulted and ultimately killed by the police.
Mm-hmm.
So he took away the weed he was smoking or
yeah,
the cigarette.
The money and,
he
yeah,
had a coil of cash that fell to the ground, so he secured that didn't happen to, you know, to not to trigger the police in any way. He tried to be friends with the police.
Yeah.
He tried to you know, like he did all the things, and this
it shows just how accommodating the African Americans are when it comes to that, this whole business of racism. Like accommodating in the sense that they are the ones who are always trying to somehow solve the puzzle of it,
And fit in within that.
A puzzle that they can solve because they are not the manufacturers of the puzzle, right? It's and it's not a problem that Black people can solve, right? Yeah. And I feel very, there are layers to the movie in my view, because I think watching it was so important for me personally, because it shifted the way I looked at, just like at the response that the African American male person needs to have. And this might sound, you know, also as a judgy and so on, but it bothered me that the woman there are two issues that came up, but the most important one for me was at the end when he asked the police officer why he became a police officer, and the police officer said he became a police because, you know, he want to, you know, he's a patriarch and da, 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 and he want to take care of the country, and he said, no man, don't give me no bullshit answer. Answer me, why did you become a police officer?
Yeah.
And then he said, yeah, well, when he was going to school, he was bullied. Mm-hmm. And his thing was he wanted to be a police officer to make sure that he put the bullies in prison.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I thought, that's it, right? So the white man has a problem, and he solved this problem with violence, because, and this particular white man, but we know that, you know, there's a bigger story being told. It's not just his specific story. So he solved his problem by confronting his bully. And in his mind, confronting his bully means living a life as a police officer.
As an authority figure.
As an authority figure to ensure that the bully is locked away.
Yeah.
So when I say that, the movie for me has like double meaning. So on the surface, we see that. And, you know, the writer, when he's in his interview, he said, yeah, you know, he hopes that what it will say to a Black person is that regardless of what happened, we, with hope and resilience, we go out every day and we're going to try and we're going to try. But it feels to me like there is another underlying solution that he doesn't blatantly say, which is that if you have the ear and the eye to listen and see it, If the white police officer is making a decision to face his monster and his, you know, the thing that is causing him fear, and he made that decision because, you know, he had to live, and the best way to do it was to live his life out as a police officer. The Black man asking to be friends with his enemy, because clearly, no matter what he does, he is going to be killed. He's being hunted by this person. So this man is not ever, and by this man I mean this white man, this police officer, is never going to be his friend. Never.
Yeah.
You cannot befriend your enemy.
Yeah.
Right? And so he continues on this train to try to make peace with him. And at the end of the movie, we see that he shoots him anyway, because that is his mission. So the Black man, in my view, at this point, have to make a decision. Are you going to continue to ask him to carry you home, to ask him to be your friend? At what point are you going to realize that you cannot run away from your fear, you know?
Yeah.
You have to face your fear. You have to face your enemy. Mm-hmm. It's not an enemy that the Black person created. No ways am I saying that. And it speaks to what's going on with the white man, that he's like that.
Yeah.
You understand? And that's a whole other conversation. But speaking from the perspective of me being a Black woman, as a Black man, you cannot continue to befriend your enemy. Now, in the movie, that's why I said, on the surface of the movie, he does, you don't see that, you know. But if you really look under the covers, he's basically, is a question to Black men, you know. What are we doing?
Yeah, because like, how what long are we you doing? Want to continuously?
Actually, the writer himself said it in the interview. He said, He asked the question, what should we do? Wait Yeah. Yes. And that for me is a very triggering question, because he didn't answer it, and he just asked, what are we doing? We're waiting. Yeah. Because reality is, because, you know, we are fragile people, and you can't talk things on the media because it's like, you know, it's hate inciting hate. Violence and hate. And so,
yeah.
But when you really look at the math of it, right? Mm-hmm. 1 + 1 = 2. You cannot say to somebody consistently, can you be my friend? Can you see where I'm from? Can you notice me? Can you accept me as a human being?
Yeah.
Can you, you know, what I found interesting, or let me not go off. So you cannot continue to do that and then expect that...
something's going
to
change.
No, because the person's diehard goal is to eliminate you.
Yeah,
so at some point, you're going to have to like decide, are you going to be eliminated? Or are you going to engage?
Yeah.
And by engaging, it means that there is violence that could follow. Now, again, this is the territory that nobody wants to talk about, because for centuries, for, you know, Black people have had to like, oh, I'm not sure, I don't want to do this, I don't want violence, let's pray it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is fascinating to me that the praying out of it is a religion that was given to Black people by very white man, right? So I think
it's a very vicious cycle. And
I think the solution, like I say, is in the movie. But the writer is very, very smart in how he covers it very subtly.
Yeah.
Because he asks his girlfriend one of the second or third times when he realizes what he's in.
Yeah.
You know, he don't know what to do, and the girl was just really like a Black queen, as always. We have the fucking answer. She was just like, okay, look, I'm a Black woman in America. Yeah. And I have a legal gun. So if you have somebody who is hunting you, you have to fight.
And didn't she even like offer, like, I have a gun, you want to borrow? Like, he was just ready to get it. He was like, no, I'm going to just like try. And then she was like, all right, then talk to him. And that's when that storyline.
So it's like the Black woman has presented him with a clear solution.
Yeah.
You understand? Because it's either you're going to fight him, because she says she literally have a gun. Because she know where she live, and she know what she's dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
What is in the Black man's spirit that he cannot come out of the thinking that, well, first I have to friend him, and I have to make him love me, I have to make him like me, and then he's going to carry me. How are you as a grown man?
Yeah.
Yes? And who own your space as a man, right? Going to allow another man to carry you home.
Yeah, and give you like your freedom.
There's so much disrespect and lack of dignity embedded in all of that.
Yeah.
And I think when we watch the movie, like I say, on the surface, he wrote a story for white people to have a feeling of what it's like. But as a Black person watching that movie, I felt so what's the best word, I felt like, is it that you're saying clearly we're idiots, that we're sitting here and allow the situation to happen to us over and over and over, and we just try to be nice? At what point are we going to draw the line in the sand and say, look, is either we're all going to survive and you're gonna have some respect for me, or we're just gonna have to war? War till the end.
Yeah, but isn't that just speaks into something that we've talked about? It was like, they had physical slavery, and they've yet Black Americans to, like, some of them haven't gotten out of that mental slavery status of seeing themselves lower than. The same thing what I think about is like the conversation we had in terms of like, everybody has some sort of privilege. There's white privilege, but there's also Black privilege. And like, you know, Black people, and in this situation the topics are more directed towards like Black Americans, need to like step into themselves and be aware of who the hell they are, and own the space and take ownership of the space, and also, like, you know, just stop with this, as you said, like the whole niceness of it, trying to like pray to myself, because like clearly they've been doing that for years now, and we see how it is. But something that, like, there are two things. On the one hand, I want to like, the irony though of whenever there is somebody who steps out and talks about it in that kind of manner, like you have people like Malcolm X, who was like, you know, very, you know, militant towards it, like look where he ended up, like you see that, how I'm wondering if that is, those situations just help to keep the people enslaved mentally, and like keeping that whole, all right, let's just try and kumbaya and just like make space, like just live like a subpar life in a certain way, to just like kind of like go along with it, you know?
I don't know. I feel, like I said before, you know, regarding how it made me feel,
it makes me feel like, okay, is it that we're, am I as a black person now, because, and we're not just talking African Americans, because it's an issue across the world. At what point are we going to take responsibility for how we stand in the world? Now, that's, let me just explain that. What I mean by that is, the white man is not, he's never going to relinquish power. Like, somebody who has power is never going to know. And so you have to figure out, okay, are you going to submit, or are you, like I said a while ago, either we're going to engage, or we're going to submit.
Yeah.
You understand? And what does submitting look like, and what does engaging look like? What is the extent to which, when we say we're going to engage the situation, what, how far are we going to take it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when with as it relates like Malcolm X, and you know, when you look at Malcolm X versus Martin Luther King, and you see that there is a struggle within the black psyche, you know, about how to manage this situation. Yeah. You understand? And We can talk all day about, like I said before, about, you know, it being not our problem, because it's like, you know, whenever we started, so them have to solve it. But the fact is, we are significantly affected by it. So, we have to play a part in figuring out how we're going to deal. And in my view, waiting is not an option. You understand? I don't think that we should wait it out. I do not think we should pray it out. I don't think we should sit it out. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
So just like the writer, I'm going to not necessarily say out what it is I think we should do. Because I think the writer is very smart, you know, you realize? Yeah. Because he folds the answer deep within the story. On the surface, you end up, you know, because at the end of this thing, he says, yeah, you know, no matter what, I'm going to go out still. I'm going to face the world. You're not going to stop me from living. But he gives clues. There are crumbs in that 30 minutes film that speaks to, okay, so what is our next move? I wanted to mention, too, that it's really troubling that when you look at all of the instances where, you know, he's trying to ingratiate himself to the policeman so much, so the extent that the man, you know, the police don't kill him,
mm-hmm.
That he is doing it in a way to kind of like, you know, if you know me and we're friends, you won't kill me. So the only way I'm a human to you is if I know you, if I can have a chat with you.
Yeah. There's something also what was bothering me, or has been bothering me for a while. That's also why I started to read the whole White Fragility book, is because, like, what kind of world we live in that somebody has to actively make a movie for somebody to be able to sympathize and like see it? Like, why do we have to explain it or show it to you? Like, shouldn't that just be like a universal thing? I've had like several conversations with like other friends of mine who are, you know, not of Caucasian descent, like either also black, brown, or like any kind of other like ethnicity that's just like not my majority of whiteness. And it's just like exhausting, like on all the levels. I said like the microaggressions and all of that, like having to always like explain, like them also like always like almost demanding you to explain it to them. It's like, where are you doing the work to like get along with? But then it plays into the fact that you said that like somebody who is in power is not going to just like give it up, especially somebody's on quote unquote, I wouldn't say power, like it being like right, because of course the whole thing isn't right, but they don't feel like they're doing anything wrong, so why should they change? Like, you know, the whole, you know, well, I'm not racist and all of that. And it's kind of sickening. It's also like very exhausting, and like you find yourself just like, you just,
it's very troubling. And I think I saw this thing in the US. I didn't know that like in some communities the white police officers, like, because the writer in the interview that he did with Trevor Noah mentioned it as well, about how white police officers have a thing, like last year after the whole George Floyd thing, that they were going into black communities and they were like going to communities with basketballs to play basketball with the children there, because you know, it's kind of their way to say, like, you know, they
racist.
Want to, you know, breach the wall and make it be that, you know.
Yeah.
And he asked the question, if we ever see white police officers going into black communities to do that. And the reason for that is because...
What do you mean, black
police? No, white police officers. No, black police officers going to white communities. Yeah. Because
as a normal course of our lives, I think black people accept that, you know, white people are human beings, and whether or not I don't need to know you and play basketball with you or drink a beer with you to consider you to be a human being and then treat you as such.
You
understand? So it really is a moment where we're at right now in the space where if we there are many things that need to be said that are not being blatantly said. And I think what the writer did was, because I cannot imagine a black person who is really thinking beyond the headlines and beyond the pale, going deeper, don't see that it cannot be okay that you just wake up every morning and wish to figure out that cannot continue.
I pray that today is not the day that you get
caught. Yeah, it's
caught.
Not sustainable.
Of course not.
And I think if when you look at what happened, when you see what happened with George Floyd, and you look at the police officer when he was, you know, fully enjoying the kneeling on the man's neck, you look at his face and you realize, like, you know, he doesn't get it.
No,
and there has to be some sort of generalized pushback.
Yeah.
You understand? But you see, most people don't want to do that because capitalism will be compromised, societies will be compromised. But it's like, okay, so but what are we going to do? Because we cannot live, we cannot continue in this way.
Mm-hmm, especially like living in a shared space with different people. And
exactly. We're at the crossroads. And by we, I mean, like we said before, you know, I think African Americans have it way more difficult and they have a tougher fight than necessarily us who live in Europe, but it's the same fight nevertheless. You understand? The same insidious sickness of the white supremacy and how it play out. You understand?
You saw the video. There's a video recently that was like released in, I don't know exactly where in Germany, but in one of the supermarkets, like some holy by white people was like cussing out one black guy, calling him the N-word, and like in Germany that was something that was going on. I have to show it to you afterwards, or I didn't even really like fully watch, because I was just like, it's just a lot, because, you know, on the same hand you have, you know, the police officer getting the sentence from, or not that like, he's gonna get the sentence soon, but he got, you know, charged guilty on all three charges of what they were suing him on. And there were people, like, even after that whole happened, like taking screenshots of his face because he looked really genuinely surprised that he was gonna get charged. It was like, oh my god, what's going on? Like, he wasn't expecting this. And then, like, not even like a day later, that thing with the 16-year-old girl happening where she, you know, she gets shot. So it's like,
so, you know, as it relates to the whole officer thing, and, you know, that, because we saw that other thing that happened with the young girl, the 16-year-old girl that was shot by the police while she was attempting to stab the other woman.
Like,
you know, there's the conversation as to, it must happen on both sides, you know, because I feel like with especially when, as it relates to the police officers in the US and the way how they treat the people that they come into contact with, there are three things that I think that is happening, right? So the first thing is, you can see that the police officers are not well trained, right? They are completely ill-equipped to de-escalate situations, and, you know, it's I don't even understand why that wouldn't be a thing that they would immediately correct, because it is evidenced throughout all of the incidences that we've seen on camera. You see that there is a lack in the training of the police officers.
Mixing up gun with tasers.
There is a general lack.
Jesus.
The second thing is that I do believe that within the police force there are, you know, elements of racists. People who are straight up, you know, racist, right? But here is a third thing for me, and this is a thing that I was discussing at length with your father yesterday, because there's a conditioned DNA response that a white person have when they see a angry black person.
Mm-hmm.
They are immediately triggered and are fearful
and in defense.
At the root of all of what you're seeing going on with the police is that they are fundamentally afraid of a black person. The black skin triggers them in very negative ways. You understand? And that cannot be trained out of somebody. Yeah. You cannot train that out of somebody. And you don't have to be racist to necessarily be triggered by that as a white person.
Yeah.
I think this is something that comes from, it's, you know, Toni Morrison in an interview had said that, you know, there are many, many repercussions or results of this racist structure that was built by the white man. And he thinks that having done that, that, you know, he feels it's, we feel like we're the only ones as black people who get affected by it.
Mm-hmm.
But they have been severely affected by it, by the, this dangerous thing that they've created. And the way that a white person is affected by it is that they don't eat, it's ingrained in their DNA. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the feeling of knowing that there's a guilt attached to every interaction that they have with the black person, the at the deep back of their minds, and deep in them DNA, them know, say, all right, there's a reason for this person to hate me, that there's a reason for this black person to hate me.
So
they're
in fear.
Constantly in fear and constantly triggered. It's one thing when you have little slight little microaggressions, they'll do that. But in a situation where the police is involved and you have a violent or angry black person deal with, whether the person is in the right or in the wrong, it causes a trigger reaction in them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was, you know, talking to the father about it, I was saying it is a job that the white man needs to see to.
Yeah.
He has to uncover and unpack. Yes, the deep recesses of the, like I was saying, it's not just on that side, it's also on the black side as well. So as black people, I think we are more triggered in the sense that we're gonna rally around a black person who is treated in any way that is you know, considered, you know, unjust.
Yeah.
Because that's just because that's how we've been able to survive.
As a community,
as a tribe, we've been able to survive it, right? But we have to address like some of the problems associated with that, because a lot of the times if you are somebody who is living in a society and you're breaking laws and so on and so forth, the law is going to come at you, and the law is not going to come at you necessarily because you're black, but because you're breaking the law of the society. And we as black people have to get to the place where we can be able to see the crime separate from the color of the person's skin, for example.
Yeah, but I feel you can't forget though that there's like if there's a criminal act that happened, you'll still be treated differently according to the race. The best thing that we talk about, especially with this whole situation, for example, the 16-year-old girl,
mm-hmm.
was she going to attack her? Of course. Was it good that the police was there in the sense of they were supposed to break it up? Yes. Was it necessary for him to shoot the girl? No. But I think that is like, that has just to do with America's, as you said, America's police system being flawed. Like, I looked at it because I think when I talked to Daddy and Jonathan about it, like, they were like, yeah, but, you know, she was going to, you know, it's hard being a police, and, like, you know, they can't understand, like, why they pull. I'm like, they have a taser, right? You do not need to kill somebody, and you do not need to be, because I think it was like, when I watched the video, it was like multiple shots at the girl. Like, all those shots could have even, like, hit one of the bystanders, like, even hit the girl that was going to be stabbed anyway, right? And I think, like, if they already have tools in place, like a taser, right, that can stun somebody with enough time for them to get, you know, get a hand and, like, control the person, put the person in handcuffs or whatever, like, I don't see the necessity of shooting. But maybe I'm talking from a European German standpoint, where in Germany, if you even shoot your gun, you know how much paper filing you have to go through and all sorts of, like, what was the reason behind it. And I do still believe, like, there is, if the only situation where I see where I could, like, justify a police shooting somebody, regardless if they're doing a crime or whatever, if that person is actively either shooting somebody else or trying to shoot the police, right? Because the main focus of police and generally, you know, what is it, civil servants or people who, you know, supposed to take care of, like, the people, is the main priority is to keep people safe and alive. That's what I thought the whole thing.
Yeah, but that is a German thing. I don't think that you have to look to see what the United States police force, what their, you know, ethos is. But I want to get back to what I was trying to express a while ago, Annie, about the ingrained work that needs to be done on the part of, you know, white people.
Because
like I said, you know, it is not something that you can train yourself out of. Why is it that when you see a black person, you want to, you immediately want to switch to this next side of the road? A white woman walking will hold her purse even tighter if you see a black. Like, those are some real things. You know, in Germany, I remember when Jonathan was in kindergarten, I think I talked about this already, where there is a song that sings about, about, you know, the black man.
Yeah, that's from Schwarzman, like, who's scared of the black man. Yeah.
So, and these are children's songs
that you
sing, that white teachers teach white children, German children.
Yeah.
So as a child, you already have an idea that a person with black skin is somebody you should run from, somebody who is dangerous, mm-hmm. somebody is coming to harm you.
And they might not even notice, like, the connection that they're doing.
No, they're not.
From the very get-go.
But what is happening is, like, there's this a generational teaching that's going on from one white person to the next, mm-hmm. that says, you know, you should be afraid of a black-skinned person. No, when you translate and when you transform that into adult life, and you this person becomes now a police officer.
Yeah.
You cannot train that out of him, you know, because that's something that is ingrained in his DNA.
Yeah.
Black people have a tendency to be afraid of dogs, for example. We're triggered when you see dogs. Why? Because in a lot of the way to control slaves in them time was to use dogs.
Yeah.
You understand? And we in a modern life, as modern black people, might feel triggered by a dog and not even understand where it's coming from. We just might initially think, oh, it's because obviously dogs can bite you. Mm-hmm. But it runs deeper than that. And that's the point I'm making about the work that white people have to do to disrupt and unlock some of those deep emotionally learned attitudes towards people of darker skin. And then on the flip side, as black people, we have to figure out, all right, so that's how the white man is, that's how I'm set up in society, but what can we do for ourselves? So how are we building strong communities? How are we building strong families? Mm-hmm. This situation with this young girl just distressing, because I mean I was not planning to watch the video, because again, like you say, I don't participate in this trauma thing, but the story is still being unfolded, because I think there is I saw a video that I'm going to have to watch after this to see. The girl was in foster care, you know.
Yeah.
And why was she in foster care? How could she be in foster care and her father happened to be, because her father was there. The father is the man who kicked the girl in the head,
you know. So that's her legitimate father.
That is her father. So you have to ask the question, okay, so there is a whole collapse. There's a collapse of failure of adults for this young girl.
Yeah, of course.
You understand? So and again, let's separate it from the fact that the you have white racist police, racist or ill-trained, as well as conditioned DNA police officers who are, you know, they are just intent on killing black people.
Yeah.
Put that, we accept that. Mm-hmm. But we also have to ask the question, okay, what's going on in a community or in a family? This man now, his child is in foster care. He's there on the scene when his daughter is going to be fighting with women. Mm-hmm. And he stands there. And his maleness and his poise as a man is not able to de-escalate the situation and protect his child.
Yeah.
And she is a child. She's 16. And that's also so many things. What bothers me, that black women are, black girls are seen as black women. When you see them, it's like it's a woman. But no, she's a child.
Yeah.
And she needed to have been protected. Where was her father? Her father was off to the side, kicking another black woman in her head.
Mm-hmm.
There was a total collapse of the society and the family. And this is my view. I think to begin to solve this situation,
mm-hmm.
I think it is important that we focus on the details of our lives. I've always said this.
Yeah.
Build strong families. It should not be that in a community where you have, because I mean, when I looked at the scene, there were many black,
a lot of people there,
right? Yeah. So why you have a community, you have two women fighting, a girl and an adult, because the woman who was fighting her was 26, 27. That again is another total madness to me, mm-hmm. and dysfunction, that as a grown woman you're going to be picking a fight with a 16 year old girl.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I'm saying is, what is happening in that community that the men the black men in that community see two women knuckling up to have a fisticuff, and somebody, why the police have to be calling a situation when there are black men there to say, look here, no, we're not doing that shit around here, stop
mm-hmm,
this
mm-hmm.
Something has happened within the community we could argue in Aenia, and I think that is what most people will say, well, the reason why black communities are broken and shattered and in a shambles like that is because of structural racism and white supremacy, which could be true and probably is true,
yeah,
right? Let's just say it is true,
yeah,
but what do we do then? How do we get out of this death cycle and this death wheel that we're in?
I think the best
way to do is to begin with the details of your life. Build back strong black families. Strong black families mean black men are not you cannot, going to prison cannot be a badge of honor, right?
Yeah.
Although we don't need to be rappers and basketball players.
Somehow
we can be mechanics and carpenters and really do just regular ass work, right?
Yeah.
Black women, you understand? Like, there are things that we have to have a very intimate conversation with amongst black people, You understand, to address some of those things, because nobody's coming to save us.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
But don't let us get it twisted. The onus to deconstruct and demolish racism and to see to it is on the shoulders of the white people. So as human beings, we have a lot of work to do, and we're not doing it. We're not getting to the work. You understand?
And also, I think, like, in terms of what you're saying, that, you know, what you're asking also to a bigger extent is you're asking from a person who potentially comes from a very dysfunctional, like, state of mind, because due to the environment, due to things like racism and stuff. You're asking, in this case, like, we don't know what the guy's situation is, like, where was even the mother from, the girl and stuff like that. So clearly the whole situation is already dysfunctional. You're asking, like, dysfunctional people to get their shit together, basically. And we're all dysfunctional, don't get me wrong. But, like, in a way, what I think of, like, it's in these situations... How do I say this? Like, you see, as black people and generally, like, minorities, they tend to stick together in communities. Like, as I said, those communities need to help the individual, because, like, clearly on each and everybody's own, they have problems and issues they need to, like, work with, right? So I guess what's necessary is, like, in these black communities, for them to, like, help each other, like, you know, with their dysfunction. Like, I might know things, or I can help you with things that you need help with, and vice versa. And I guess that's what we have to do, because, as I said, like, I think from the white standpoint, I think there needs to be more white people talking to white people about racism, because there's nothing,
so
nothing,
they can solve it amongst themselves.
Yeah, because there's nothing, neither you, me, anybody else who's, like, the most intelligent, illiterate, in between, whatever, could say to a white person to help change, like, switch it. Because it's, at the end of the year, you have to, like, you know, change your mind on your own. But, like, maybe this is just a thing of, like, we all have a bit of xenophobia, I guess, that you're more likely to listen or understand somebody or something going with, like, somebody who looks like you, which is awful, but it's just something primitive, you know?
Well, you know, I think, yeah, I think one of the, I think we just so we are clear, the onus is on white people to solve the problem that they created with this thing.
But then it's
and
hard.
And I think that within black communities, we still, there is work that needs to be done to dismantle and disrupt some of our ways of being that might have been developed because of the structure of racism,
for sure,
right?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at the picture, if you look at it even deeper, you know how we always say, like, this is a hellhole earth. I always say, like, it's a literal hellhole,
yeah,
because we're dealing with situation with individuals that are, you know, their psyche and their who they are as on how they present was built in some very dysfunctional ways.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that scene, like, I don't know if people want, I think that scene with a girl, you know, attempting to stab the girl and the police shooting her, mm-hmm, and the father kicking the black woman on the ground and kicking her in her head. I mean, that was just like a snapshot of the hell that earth
madness
is and has become.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know you know, we're gonna say no. Okay, yes, the officer, you're gonna he is gonna have to pay for what he did. But then you have to also question. Okay, if he didn't shoot the girl, she would have probably stabbed the next girl, and the other girl would have dead. Either way, a black woman would have died in that setup or be severely harmed.
Yeah,
right.
For sure.
So it's like, how do we get out of the death ring? And to me, I feel again. We get out of this by paying attention to the work that you individually have to do.
And
that is not about, because I think I was having a conversation about that same thing here, and it was like the person was misunderstanding me and saying, you know, like, what are you suggesting then, that somehow, you know, black people must take responsibility for the things that have been happening to them? And I'm like, life is hard. You understand me? And shit happens. And we don't, like, just because we are black, we can say that is our burden to carry. But you have other races that have had other things to carry, other peoples of, you know, the mm-hmm. world. And then you can break that down to its common thing. Every individual human being have some shit them carrying from them parents or thing they have to be facing with. Because, again, this is the hellhole of Earth. Right, we come here in order to work out these things. Now, what we get distracted in is that I think we get distracted on the one hand, you know, thinking, okay, well, because white man created racism, you know, that's why you have single mothers, that's why you have so much men in a court, that jail, because, you know, they create the jail system to have to catch black men and put them in there, but. Again, how are we going to deal? Are we going to try to do what the guy did in the movie, which is to stop smoking the weed, throw away the money, do everything what you think you need to do in order to make it work? Or we're going to answer the question that the writer asked. Are we going to wait? Yeah. Are we going to continue to wait for things to change?
Because I think the disease of humanity and every individual is we forget the moment, so we keep living in the past of what happened back then and like projecting it onto the future before, like, all right, so like, what can you do right now though, like right now in this moment, like, right, it's like right now in the moment, like in terms of, like, you know, in those like communities, like, okay, speaking as, you know, as, you know, a mixed person, as like thinking of like Black Americans need to probably, that's what they need to do. Like, all right, you know what? The whole system, the white people need to figure that out. But in terms of like their communities, they need to talk to one another, try and like figure it out. Okay, so what are we going to do to better our community for us, right? Like, yeah, we can't take on racism in terms of like what the white people need to do. But what can they do, or what can they do like to help one another? And I feel like, you know, and I feel like the first steps you could see was like waking up, in a sense, like last year 2020, yeah, the whole corona thing and so on, but you could see like them standing up, writing, protesting, and like actively doing something, actively like making noise and like be like trying to talk about it more. I think is like are the first steps in like the right direction, instead of just like letting fizzle
I have
out.
To push back on that, because they've all, I mean, people have always been writing, there have been riots for ages.
Yeah.
Like I said a while ago, Martin Luther King, there was that kind of right, and then there was a Malcolm X kind of right. Like,
yeah.
they've tried all the writing. I do believe, like I said, the problem cannot be solved in that way. I think either you're going to go full on and just have a full on war, and then just war until everybody dead, or until we all accept that, okay, we don't like each other, we're going to live separately.
Yeah.
Or until we say, okay, you know what, fuck this war, and let's just try and figure it out and just live together, right?
Mm.
And I think nobody wants that option, right? So what are we left with then? Because nobody wants that option, because to choose that option would mean to dismantle and to destroy everything that we know as life, capitalism and globalism, everything would just have to stop, because like the system is built on that whole is built to support all of that. So in order to break the system, all of them things would crumble, right? So and you know, like I said, the guy said it, you know, that he doesn't. He asked the question, what are we going to continue to wait? The writer of the thing, when he did the interview, he said, are we going to continue to? And he didn't answer the question. But it's a very important question to ask. It's like, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
No. We can choose the war. Or we can say, look, As Black people, we're going to reassess.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the business of education is what we're focusing on. The business of building strong families is what we're dealing with. We're not going to celebrate crimes. We're not going to celebrate crimes and gun shooting and all these things through our art and with music. Yes. Because a lot of the ways that people present, Black young men present, is as a result of the music they consume to a certain extent, as well as
the conditioning that's being given to them.
Right. And all of that is man, it's like a death wheel. Because, you know, as I was saying that, I thought to myself about how I was watching this thing the other day where they were talking about how the music industry is owned. Is not owned by Black people, but the people who are at the face of Black music are Black rappers, right? They sell the lifestyle, they sell the whole thing to other young Black people in communities, right? But the ownership, however, of the message, right, needs to be from Black people. Because if you say, you know, the bling life is what you want.
Yeah.
Are you really being the best Black person you can be for your sisters, your brothers out there who are listening to your music?
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of them, they're like puppets. They're not the ones who own the music. They're just the front guys where they push out on the stage to dance. So at a certain point, the ownership of our art, ownership of
sports, because I was just going to say, it's like you see that throughout. It's like, I think that's like not just in that one. The whole environment is like messy and just
so
like
I don't know, I wanted to also quickly say about LeBron's comment regarding the thing and how, again, me and Jonathan really fight real bad over that. We watched the documentary with Michael Jordan,
mm-hmm.
and throughout, you know, I was complaining the whole time that Michael Jordan, he's a great basketball player and so on, but I never respected the fact that he didn't come out and was participating in commentary about what was happening in society, right?
Yeah.
And that, you know, him sell all these Nike shoes and have all of this money, and it feels to me like he never really spoke out on issues, right? Yeah. And Jonathan the whole time was like, mommy, calm down, because like he just wants to play basketball, what's the big deal, whatever. And so we went back and forth with that, and now with this thing with LeBron talking, I was like, okay, so this is the extreme though. Because while I'm okay with it, it makes sense for people like LeBron who are seen as role models within, you know, the Black community, it's important that they say something and have a voice. But you have to have an informed voice and a researched view. Like, mm-hmm. you can't just off the cuff talk all sorts of things.
Yeah.
You know what he said, and you I don't know if you saw the, what's her name, Candice, was going hard at him about how, right, and about how, you know, he's despicable and da, 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 whatever.
Disgusting.
I think LeBron has to be only watchful that when he makes his statements, he gets all the information, because I am very sure that by the end of this week or maybe even next month, we're going to find that this incident with this girl, there's more to it.
That's happening.
That happened, right? No, that still don't take away from the fact that the police officer,
he
overreacted in the situation. But then it's asking a lot of the police, because like you as a police officer, you go and you see a scene where, okay, so the man just kicked the girl up in her head, and this other girl have a knife waiting to stab the next one in her throat. As a police officer, you have to stop the most dangerous of them, and you, because your whole goal is to
again,
protect.
It goes back to the system that the first thing shouldn't be to shoot somebody, especially to fatally shoot somebody, right?
Well, like, let us look at
she
it
did
nothing
not need to
is
die.
Perfect in this life, right? Of course she didn't need to die.
Yeah.
And so my thing is with what I was going back to, what LeBron, his comments, like, I feel like he has to make sure that when he's saying things, he wait and let the story settle a bit,
mm-hmm.
before he runs ahead and
but
say
the same,
whatever.
Okay, but the same kind of like, not even like slight of a pass you want to give the police. It's the same kind of slight of a pass you'd have to give, you know, to LeBron. You know what I mean? Like that he just naturally reacted.
Because
the thing is like,
yeah.
The moment we're gonna all, there's gonna come a point where we're all just gonna have to be like, everybody is going to be held accountable for everything. Like,
yeah.
We're all gonna just have to be accountable. You're gonna have to be held accountable, and then there's no more excuse. But yeah, but it's, no, you now in the moment. What happened in the past happened in the past. The future, we don't know what's going on in the future. Right now, you have this and that to change. Right? I think the anger and the annoyance with what LeBron James had should have been targeted towards the reform of the police, because it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's all well and good for the police to finally get charged and they go to jail, but they are so many more polices out there, right? And if it's like okay, we're trying to chop down the tree branch for branch instead of hitting it at the root, which is like the restructuring the way how they teach
I just explained to you though, Enya, that we can restructure, we can train all we want, but there are going to be two other elements there, because it's a three-point situation. There is a retraining, there are genuine racists within the police force, and then you have the matter, the deep psychological matter that we're not even know how to correct much, and I don't think that many people identify it. The conditioning that we have to react, white people have in reacting aggressively and fearfully when they see a black body. But we're gonna go around.
Like either aliens need to help us, or I'm just waiting for the computers to take over because they're gonna be able to like stop us better. Because we're clearly not able to like clear our own shit up clearly. Yeah, but if any day, or hope to God one day like this whole thing gets solved, you know, there's gonna be something else.
Okay, so I think what we need to pay attention to though is what is the purpose of Earth, and this comes back again to spirituality and what you believe, right?
Yeah,
and even though I think I always say that this is a hellhole, it's a hellhole with a purpose. We're meant to come here as souls to work things out, and you know, in order for us to do that working out, we have to have this pushback. We have to coexist with the shadows and the difficult, hard white violence that we deal with.
Yeah.
Because the point is, when we're finished, when some of us get, you know, hopefully death, we can move on having done what we needed to do in this lifetime, so we can choose better lifetimes going forward. But I think I want to finish up by talking about the song that was used at the end of the so the Two Distant Strangers is a line in the Tupac version of the song. What's the name of this, the rap song again? But the way it is, things will never be the same. And in his rap cover of the song, this by Bruce Hornsby, he mentioned the line "Two Distant Strangers." I suspect that's where the writer got the title from.
Yeah.
But I find it interesting that in the original version of that song, you know, the singer says that's just the way it is. Some things will never change. Tupac raps that, and he raps on other things, but in the original song, the person says that's just the way it is, things will never change. Oh, but don't you believe them? And to me, that's the most powerful line. And I noticed that in the movie they did not use the Tupac version of the song. They use the original version, and at the end of the movie, he says, "Oh, but don't you believe them? Yeah, things will never be the same." And I found that was the most, one of the most hopeful or more, it's a hopeful end to it. Like, you know, we might think that it is always going to be Groundhog Day and that things are going to always be that way, but it doesn't. It doesn't have to be that way. We individually have the opportunity to do what we can do to make our lives and deal.
Yeah.
And that is putting that juxtaposed to me saying a while ago that here is a hellhole, because that's the whole point. It's an individual soul journey we're all on here, you know. And some of us get distracted by trying to change the constructs of the hellhole, but the constructs of the hellhole is made so that we can refine ourselves and find our way out of here. Yes, people get born and get lost, like me say, distracted on their soul journey.
Yeah.
You know, trying to build buildings and change. No, the system as it is, that is how it is. Because in order for us to know ourselves, we have to push against what is not ourselves. Because that's how you get to know yourself, you know, when you're confronted with something that is not you.
Yeah.
You understand? So we have to not believe. We have to not believe for our personal self, and then work from the inside out. So disrupt, the white man need to disrupt the things them inside of him and grow and raise his family in such a way that they will have the sensitivity that you're talking about without having to be taught it by somebody who's black or brown, right? But black people also have to disrupt in their themselves as well, the enslaved mentality, you know, yeah. and this sense of like, okay, I have to think that way because that's what black people think, yeah. right? No, we are on a soul journey, and our job here is to push back against the things here deeply embedded in our structure of the world, the way the world set up, the hellhole.
Yeah.
We have to push back against it. And in the pushback is when we are purified, transformed into what it is our soul really is. And then we get to die and move on.
Well, nicely said, Mom. I'd be lying if I didn't say, I just feel like the whole topic is so exhausting. Because I feel like, you know, you're really true food. Let's, I feel like that's what it feels yeah. like a lot.
All right, so
like,
maybe we don't visit here again. We've said
we're not going to talk about America anymore. We're not going to talk about race anymore.
Let's be clear. This is not just talking about America. Because I don't, you know, I think we say that too much. Like, we always, you know, specifying African-American or whatever. But whatever we want to run from it or not, the fact of the matter is, as a black person, you're going to deal with this situation, whether in physical way or microaggressions, but let us end the podcast with
positivity.
The episode with two things. One, what's the name of that movie that we watched on Netflix where we got the thing about, is it though? Is it really though? What's it named? Because I think it would be nice.
Please like me.
Yes, yeah. That's a really nice Australian series. That's funny. I mean, there's a bit of tragedy in it, but the tragedy is what is managed well.
It's in that, I think, with the tragedy, it keeps it realistic and not too goofy Disney, right? Like, you know, like,
but it's a very funny take on a life of a young man. And you know, if after watching Two Distant Strangers you're stressed about, like, a light comedy.
And what was the other thing?
The other thing, Anya, is the recommendation of the book of the month.
Okay, Mom, go ahead. Let's hear the synopsis.
The book of the month is Lifespan by David A. Sinclair, PhD. It's titled Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To, right? And in it,
the irony of you reading a book about wanting to live longer, or like, you know, we not needing to die, after you're just like, you know, making death seem like, you know, gracious, you know, touch from God.
All right, so continue. To be clear.
Just continue.
The reason I'm reading this book, you know, Anya, it's not because I personally think that's the whole point of reading. To read something that is going to disrupt what you think. I think that dying is not a bad thing, and that we need to live our lives and die gracefully. Mm-hmm. But I like the idea of reading something that's saying, no, you don't have to die. No, what that is going to do is give me information that I don't already have.
This is how a general TED Talk always happens.
And
it's like one question triggers a monologue.
Anyway, so as I was saying, the book is called Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To. And I'm just going to read at the back where it says, it's through this page-turning narrative, Sinclair invites the reader into the process of scientific discovery, revealing the emerging technologies and simple lifestyle changes that have been shown to help us live longer and healthier for longer. At once a roadmap for taking charge of our own health destiny and a bold new vision for the future of mankind. It says the book will forever change the way you think about why we age and what we can do about it. Right. So, I mean, it's very sciencey. And like I said, I'm not somebody who necessarily likes science. But, you know, the discussion, the ethics involved in what our lives will look like 20, 50 years from now is fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, and how we take for granted, you know, the little things that science has, the many things that science have helped, you know, help us as humans to be able to enjoy modern life.
Yeah.
We take it for granted. And he speaks about, you know, all the new sort of technologies that are already happening and they know about in their science labs, but they can't really come out to the public and talk about them because the public is gonna, you know, run and scream that the sky is falling.
Who makes those rules though? Like, who is saying, like, who is feeling like, okay, no, they're not gonna be ready for that? Like, what kind of,
because there are people, you know, don't do that, Anya.
Don't do that.
You know exactly that.
Maybe I feel offended because clearly we're in that group of people
speak for yourself.
No, like, also in terms of, like, you know, the whole thing where they say, like, you know, the whole conspiracy they go on and they say, like, you know, there are aliens here already and like, they already have alien technology, but they're not ready to set it loose.
Yeah, because it is true. There's humanity.
Whose fault is that, though? They need to start integrating it from the get-go.
No, I think that it's that people are not always ready to. People are easier. They're easier for them to drink milk, like suck milk from a titty, than to eat hard food. I think there's a scripture in the Bible that talks about it. Some people just not ready for big food. You understand? Because their bodies can't digest it. Anyway, don't break my flow. Like I said, the book is Lifespan, and there is this quote that I found. It says, if females and males are the same, are in the same environment in general, females will live longer. It's a common theme throughout the animal kingdom. Scientists have tested whether it is the X chromosome or the ovary that is important. Using a genetic trick, they created mice with one or two X's, which with either ovaries or testes. Those with the double dose of the X lived longer, even if they had testes, and especially if they didn't, thus proving once and for all that female is a stronger sex. So I mean, this
but it's also because, you know, like when the baby develops in the belly, the baby is always female
first,
and then it like basically, you know, everything came from
female.
Yeah,
right. So but he talks a lot about the fact that, you know, females generally live longer as well, because there's something that is innate in our DNA that makes that possible. Like, it's just a very interesting book, and it's a nice respite from, you know, racial issues, or, you know, corona and vaccine and all of that. He actually talks a bit about vaccines and about how, you know, people, we take for granted some of the things. And for people who are against taking the vaccine, it's like, okay, well, you know that there are vaccines that really do help and have been tried and tested. Yeah. And just because these vaccines came around quicker doesn't necessarily mean that they are worse. That's not me saying, yeah, we're going to take the vaccine. I'm just saying, mix it up a bit, you know, and push yourself to think outside of what it is that you thought, you know. So, okay. Lifespan, David A. Sinclair, give it a read.
Well, thank you for your recommendation, Mom. We'll be looking forward to, I'm assuming you're going to prepare like some sort of a presentation to tell us about the facts you've learned in the book.
I will do no such thing.
That is so sad. You clearly do not care for the class or for me. Good to know. Anyway, for those who are still listening up to this point, thank you very much for listening. Make sure to check us out on all our social media platform, like accounts. We're on Facebook, of course, SoundCloud. You know, also Spotify, Twitter, and of course iTunes. So this is us signing out.
Yeah. So see you for the 40th episode, and stay grounded.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye.